put your flags up in the sky. And wave them side to side. Show the world where you're from.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Whole world, one night, one place, Brazil. Everybody put your flags in the sky and do what you feel. It's your world, my world, our world today. And we invite the whole world to play. It's your world.
Welcome back
world,
to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Man, it's just good timing to have our next guest on the show. But before we get into the news, that the World Cup news we need to discuss with Matt Beasler. Matt, every time you come on the show to talk about the World Cup, I will post a different picture of you on my Twitter account. Yesterday, you wanted me to post a picture of me and you and Matt Beasler and Nate and Christian Okoye. Now I choose. Can you look at the picture I post while you're on the phone with us?
Yeah, let's do it. What are my options?
No, you don't. This I pick. Ladies' choice today.
Oh, okay.
Take a look at that handsome picture and tell me what you think. Grade that one. Let's see how long it takes to post. It's posting now. Until then, well, there. It's been posted. It's going to make Nate jealous, I think. I like it, though.
All right.
You like that one, Nate?
You cropped me out of that picture, didn't you?
No, I didn't. Is it okay I take a picture with Matt without you just once in a while?
I remember that picture.
You were not. I did not crop you out of it.
I remember that day.
Where would you have been in that picture?
We did take a group picture together
right,
that same day.
Not that
day.
One?
No.
It's just me and
there
Matt.
We go.
You like
MLS
that one?
MLS Cup, 2013.
That's a good one, isn't it?
That's a great picture.
See?
That was months before Matt played in the World Cup in Brazil.
You didn't even know that picture existed, Matt Beasler.
I haven't seen that picture in a long time.
I got a lot of pictures of you that I'm going to post. I got a whole folder. I'm ready for all these segments. Now, we have you on the show to talk about the U.S. men's national team. But when I walk in here, Marco is fidgeting. He's watching the TV. And Susan was in here with me because she has to drive me around because I'm a child. And so Marco's like, do you see what's going on right now? He's trying to explain it to Susan. And then Nate storms in here. He goes, I don't believe it. And he starts yelling and carrying on before the show. And they're trying. We start the monitoring Saudi Arabia beating Argentina. And then once the show starts, it goes final. And Saudi Arabia beats Argentina. How shocking of a result is that? What was your reaction when you saw that was a final?
I was shocked. It's one of the greatest upsets in World Cup history. A lot's been made about this is Messi's last World Cup. I would have bet that Argentina comes out and absolutely destroys Saudi Arabia. I thought they were going to be looking to make a statement in that first game, just like England did against Iran, and I was wrong. Cannot believe they lost that first game. It's not over for them, but not a great start. The Argentina media is going to be going nuts today.
And see, that's the next question I had for you, because we were talking about yesterday how the weight of the world is on England, and anything they do great, everyone loves them. But if they do something terrible, then the tabloids will have at it. So like, what kind of pressure is on Argentina now? Not only from home, but just wherever they go, that's all anyone's going to talk about. What does that do to them emotionally, you think?
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge for them because they are under a microscope, especially with Messi. He's announced it's his last World Cup. They are the World Cup favorites, or one of the World Cup favorites. So all the pressure on the world. If anything, I don't know, maybe losing this first game will actually help them, because now it can't get any worse. Their back's against the wall. and they can go out and just play. They know they have to win. So we'll see. I think it's happened before. Spain was in the same situation back in 2010, and they ended up running the table and it actually winning the entire thing. So we'll see what happens. But I'm really intrigued because Argentina next, they have to play Mexico, and then they have to play Poland, which are two very tough matchups.
We know about the Bukady jinx. Usually it's only alive here in Kansas City. Do you believe this loss by Argentina has anything to do with Nate on an episode of Hot Mic with SSJ picking Argentina to win it all?
Nate, I don't know. That's a tough one. Would you like to redo your pick?
Yeah, because you mentioned Spain winning the World Cup. They're the only team in the history of the World Cup to lose their opening game and then go on to win the thing. So, yeah, I don't feel great about it. It's not impossible, obviously. But, I based my pick on one of the things you mentioned, which is I was kind of looking at this, and this was a little bit with my heart. I like Messi. I'm a Messi fan. And the one thing he's missing on his resume, if you want to make the case about him being the best player in the history of the world, is he's never won a World Cup. And I was thinking, you know, swan song for Messi, the whole team. They seem to have built a good team around him that plays well through what he's capable of doing still at this point in his career. They had gone 36 games without losing. 36, only one. That's the second longest unbeaten streak in international soccer history. And so they just won the South American Championship last year. Like, they were in really good form. So I don't feel like it was that stupid of a pick, but it's feeling pretty stupid right now. And maybe I just jinxed them. So, yeah, I would like to amend it.
You bring up great points. A lot of people were feeling the same way. I'm just surprised that you guys talked about soccer on Hot Mic with SSJ. That's impressive.
Well, we brought it, we phrased it as World Cup for Dummies, because I'm a dummy. And so we put just, but I thought it would be cool, just so we did like a little primer for fans that want to be a part of it, that want to be watch the World Cup but don't know as much as people like Nate or Lebo or you or Marco or anyone, so they don't feel excluded. So we did like a little, I don't know, 45 minutes where Nate tried to explain things. And so almost like a viewing guide, a companion to watch the World Cup. And so, yeah, you know. And then Nate talked down to me, and everyone laughed. It was great. But Nate said he's a Messi guy. Are you a Messi guy? Do you like Messi?
I love watching him play. I would probably choose Ronaldo over Messi.
Uh-huh.
It's just personal preference. You can't go wrong. They're different players. But the fact that I sort of have more of a personal history with Ronaldo, I got to go up against him in the World Cup in 2014. So, I've always been drawn towards him.
You played against both guys, though.
Right.
I watched you play against Messi in Houston, Texas. The result against Portugal was better. And you really more like matched up actually with Ronaldo in that game. But that's pretty incredible to think, isn't it? That you were on the field with both of those guys in your career.
I actually did not.
Oh, that's right. You were there. Yeah. You were there, but you didn't play in that game. That was stupid of me. I should have remembered.
No,
that.
You're good. I had a great seat. I was sitting right on the bench. Getting to watch Messi all game.
And he scored a free kick goal that was like a perfect Messi free kick goal. I remember that, too.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so I asked Nate this question. I'll ask you the same. So it looked for a while like the United States was going to get a win yesterday. And then they give up a late goal. And so they end up 1-1 with Wales. How is that? I mean, I said, is that devastating? Nate said it wasn't devastating. It was disappointing.
Damaging was the word I would use. Yeah, but not devastating.
But what? So what? How do you describe that result?
I like the word disappointing, and I think, you know, I was wrong too with the way that I thought the game was going to be played out. You know, we talked about yesterday what my concerns were. I told you that I was concerned about how we were going to start the game. Now, I was concerned that we might come out a little flat and conservative, and I was really looking for us to come out on the front foot and play aggressively. And I thought if we did that, we were, you know, going to take control of the game and win the game, you know, comfortably 2-0. That was my prediction. And it was actually happened the opposite. We did come out. We looked really well. We looked sharp. We looked into the game, and we looked like the much better team pretty much the entire first half. So going into the second half, you know, I thought they were going to come out and show more of the same thing, and they actually came out in the second half and looked flat and looked like they were sort of protecting this lead and playing conservatively. And Wales came out, credit to them. They upped their tempo and their intensity, and they looked like the better team in the second half. So overall it's a disappointing result, especially with the way that we started the game. But you know, that's the, in the group stage, there's three games, and so we still have everything to play for. There's just not a lot of room for error anymore.
Okay, I think this is a great opportunity to talk to some people that, as Steven said, probably watched that game yesterday, don't watch a lot of soccer. And I had some buddies of mine texting me, asking me like why the game played out the way that it did. And as you said, the U.S. played great in the first half. They clearly looked like the better team. They were dominant. Then all of a sudden they get the goal and everything changes. And now all of a sudden it looks like Wales are the team that's on the front foot. And so I had some buddies of mine texting me. It's almost like you said, they got too conservative. It's like going into a prevent defense in football where, oh, you're playing great defense and now you're actually giving too much respect to the opponent. And that happens a lot in soccer. But one of the things that I saw after the game, and I want to get your thoughts on this so people can see this play out in games. It was reported by a lot of people afterwards that in the second half, Berhalter told the team, okay, here's the deal. Wales are going to have to take chances now because they're down a goal and they're going to push their players up the field. And their back line is not a real fast back, their defenders are not super fast. So we are going to absorb that pressure, let them come up the field, and then we're going to kill them on the counterattack and get another goal or two, and then we put the game away. And I saw some people with some video breakdowns that showed that some of those opportunities were there. The U.S. got the ball into the midfield with Wales way up the field and chances to get guys like Tim Weah out there, you know, with his speed to get past the defenders. And they just didn't either see the passes or hit the passes, and they wasted those opportunities, and that's what allowed Wales to stay in the game. I'm curious, do you think that was the right approach and they just didn't execute it, or should they have had a different approach in the second half of that game?
I'm fine with that approach. I agree with that reasoning, and it's one of the reasons why I felt comfortable at halftime when we were winning 1-0. You know, before the game, we talked about, oh, Wales is going to pack it in. They're going to defend. They're tough to break down. We broke them down. In the first half, we did exactly that, and I thought that was going to be our biggest challenge. Once we had that one-goal lead, I thought the game was going to open up, and like you just explained, Wales was going to be forced to push up higher up the field, and that was going to allow us some more space to attack, and that's kind of what happened. We just didn't take advantage, and so, you know, I don't know the exact reasons for that, if it's just execution or decision making. I think fitness might have played a role in that. That was something that I did notice in the game. I think from both sides, if I'm being honest, fitness, it seemed like some of the guys were running out of steam, and I don't know if that was, you know, first game nerves. That's probably what I would guess, that nervous energy, you know, playing in your first World Cup game. You know, how many guys were cramping? You know, you saw their calves cramping up in the 65th, 70th minute. Usually that doesn't happen. But I think that nervous energy played a big role.
We're visiting with Matt Beisler here. And the big moment, obviously, and it's one, I feel bad for Walker Zimmerman because, now I will say this, if Walker Zimmerman played for a country like Argentina, the fans there, and this is, a bad thing, they'd make his life absolutely miserable, you know, after a mistake like this. But I feel bad because no guy goes to the World Cup hoping to be the guy that commits the foul that leads to a penalty like that, right? Like, he didn't want to do that. He wants to go out there and play a great game. And Gareth Bale's one of the most accomplished soccer players at this World Cup. He's clever. He can do things to put you in a bad spot. And he's making a split decision. But right when Zimmerman made the tackle, I know Stu Holden, the announcer, said, man, he didn't need to do that. Bale wasn't going anywhere. He didn't need to go into that tackle. I'm curious from you, because you played that position that Zimmerman plays. You got to make these snap decisions in the penalty area where if you get it wrong, the consequences are devastating. You know, you commit that foul 30 yards from goal, it's not that big of a deal. It's just a free kick, but you commit that foul right there, and boom, you just lost 2 points. What did you think of the decision by Zimmerman? And I guess what was just your overall reaction to that play?
Yeah, I thought it was definitely a penalty. So it was the right call. I think it was unfortunate with what happened. Zimmerman, in my opinion, clearly did not see Bale. I think Bale came in at the last second from his peripheral vision, and Zimmerman just didn't see him. I think as a defender, your mentality when you're defending in the box has to be completely different than when you're defending anywhere else on the field. When you're not in the box, you can afford to take chances. You can be aggressive. You can swing your foot and try and clear the ball with as much as you got. When you are in the box, your mindset has to shift. You can't afford to make any sort of foul. You can't afford to, you know, elbow the guy, shoulder the guy, pull any sort of jersey, and give the referee a chance to make the call. And so, you know, I think if you're going to make a decision to clear the ball like that, you have to be 100% sure that nobody else is around you, that nobody's going to stick their foot in, and you're going to get a piece of them, especially with video review. Because if one thing goes wrong, you open yourself up to make that mistake, and that's exactly what happened. But it's unfortunate. I just don't think that Zimmerman saw him.
You know, when you say that about your mindset, I know I've had this conversation with you going back years when you played. It surprises me that I don't feel like all defenders do exactly what you said, because it does make perfect sense to me. You can't take too many chances when you're in the penalty area, because, again, awarding a penalty kick, that's like an 80% chance at a goal for the other team. Don't put yourself in that position, right? But it doesn't seem like every defender approaches it that way. Does that, I guess, what's your experience with that, and does that surprise you?
It's one of the challenges. You know, the game is free-flowing. You've got to make split-second decisions, and you've got to change your mindset on the fly. And it's something that's difficult to do, I think, especially with a player like Zimmerman. He is a physical defender. It's one of his best attributes. He's extremely aggressive, really good in the challenge. He's physical. And so for him to play like one way, you know, 80, 90% of the time during the game, and then when he drops down and then when he's defending in his own box, you've got to think differently and you've got to approach it differently and potentially even play differently. That is a challenge. And you know, it's unfortunate that we were on the wrong side of it. But, you know, all in all, if I'm being fair, I think Wales probably deserved the call. It was the right call, and they probably deserved to get that goal because they did play better than us in the second half.
All right, so we're visiting with Matt Beasler. And by the way, Stephen, 7 o'clock tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Matt and I will be doing a one-hour World Cup special. So we'll have much
yes,
more
sir.
Of an opportunity to get into the nuts and bolts of this game between USA and Wales. I might actually go back and watch it a second time because I'm a glutton for punishment. We'll see if I have time today. But we'll break that down. We'll talk about the upcoming games. We'll talk about all the games that are happening. So 7 o'clock tonight, Matt and I will do a one-hour World Cup special here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, Matt, this sets up what already was going to be a big game just because it's United States and England, right? Like the history of the two countries and all of that makes it fun. But now I think it makes it for a much bigger game. I think a result becomes really important. A result being either a tie or a win for the United States starts to become very important, where had they been able to hold on and win against Wales, it wouldn't have been nearly as important. England looks good. Their roster's stacked. They got a 6-2 win against Iran. What do you think of this matchup, and how optimistic are you or whatever for the United States' chances to get something done on Friday against England?
Yeah, you said it right. It's a massive game. It is a marketing dream, a media dream. Black Friday, it's going to be huge. You know, I think everybody on paper is assuming that England's going to, you know, run the table and win this group. And so that second spot is going to come down to us and Wales. And so the fact that we tied, you know, it's essentially going to come down to, you know, potentially goal differential. I think, you know, everybody's assuming that England's going to beat the U.S. and Wales. And so it's going to come down to, all right, who's going to lose to England less and who's going to beat Iran more? But at the same time, why don't we just go out and beat England? You know,
mm-hmm.
They're a great team. You know, their depth is incredible. They're one of the favorites to win the World Cup. But you still got to go and play the game. And so I hope that we're taking the approach of, this is great. We're going to be on one of the biggest stages. This is one of the most hyped games of the entire World Cup. Let's go out and play one of our best games, and let's go beat these guys. If we go and win this game, then we're in a great position. So I think it's possible. I hope we do it. I hope we play well. I believe if we do play well, we have a chance to win this game. We just saw what happened with Saudi Arabia and Argentina. You know, yep. We're not even close to that. We're a much better team than Saudi Arabia. So it's doable. And honestly, I'm really excited to see our approach, because I hope we go out and try and get the 3 points.
All right, Matt, before we let you go, today at 10 o'clock, and there's a watch party for it, right?
Yeah, down Power and Light District.
Down Power and Light. Mexico and Poland, if you would, give us your thoughts on this matchup.
Well, this group is wide open now because Argentina just lost. So I think that both of these teams will be aware of that. And so I think both of these teams, I don't know if their mindset will change that much. I think both teams, you know, probably are entering this game either way. Hey, we want to try and win this first game. It sets us up well for the tournament. But now I think, you know, the pressure's on. I think whoever, you know, gets a result out of this game or wins this game is going to be in the driver's seat for this group. So all of a sudden, you know, this game has massive implications for this group. But yeah, if I'm going to have to predict, you know, I think Mexico performs well in these tournaments, and I'm going to have to give the edge to Mexico. I'm going to say Mexico 2-1.
You son of a gun.
Slapped Nate in his mouth. And he can taste his own blood now.
I hate to say it, I agree. Poland usually plays terribly when they get to the World Cup. And so I'm not optimistic. And I think Mexico sees now they have a chance to knock Argentina out of the World Cup. If they get if they go win today, they play Argentina in the second game. And everybody on the Mexican national team will be salivating at that opportunity. So I'm not real confident for Poland in this game at 10 o'clock, but I think it's going to be a very good game because those are two teams that are on very level, you know, in terms of like the world rankings and all that stuff. It should be a really good matchup. So
I think Mexico needs to take care of business because I would not want to be the team that faces Argentina next.
Yeah, that could go one of two ways. Argentina might collapse on themselves because they're getting destroyed by everybody in their homeland over the next few days, where they could come out fighting. So we'll see. When you're a wounded animal, Steven,
well,
we don't know how you come.
Bruce Weber does, and so Marco reminds us of that. Matt, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Have a great morning, guys. See,
that is,
Matt, see you tonight,
Beasler.
Matt. Oh, it's only 12 more hours before I get to see Matt's beautiful face in person.
What does Bruce Weber think about how Argentina may come out in their next match against Mexico? Because, as Nate said, Argentina now is a wounded animal. What do you shrug your shoulders for? We play this all the time. Look at him. You put some pressure on him, not just me.
It's a World Cup, Marco. You got to be ready.
Yeah.
This is a classic. This is one that should be just like quick, you know, easy.
All right, play hard. Kick their butt again.
No.
When you're a wounded animal,
there.
You come angry. You come.
Well, you hope we can get it.
Are those all together?
And why, I don't know why we have them all together.
Yeah, Jake made a montage with that one.
You don't have to, but he also had the clip just by itself. And I like the fact that Marco faded it out during the actual quote part that we
there's
wanted.
There's what we want.
We're struggling, Marco. You're having an Argentina-like performance right now.
Wow.
Damn.
This is not, I'm just calling it like I see it.
I know. I didn't realize the hate for Mexico ran that deep.
Oh, it does for him. Sure.
Oh, look, it's game day, pal.
The trash talk is real today. God.
Canelo went to the 49ers game last night.
That's a
probably don't have that clip either of him of Canelo.
Of Canelo at the 49ers game?
Telling Steven to keep going.
That'd be weird if he had a clip of Canelo at the 49ers game.
Well, he should if he was on his game. No, I mean the clip where he tells you to keep going.
Will you play Bruce Weber?
He doesn't have
that is wounded animal.
It's part of the I gotta find the
Well, play the
clip.
Montage so we can at least get that.
Let's hear it.
That's all right, here. Play hard. We kick their butt again.
Here it is.
When you're a wounded animal, how do you come? You come angry. You come.
Well, that's all we needed.
You can get it up.
See, you got a little more than you wanted.
Hey, there you go. Yeah. You totally redeemed yourself,
that's
Marco.
That's what she said. All right. We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to this little slice of life that we call the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Right now we have former Chiefs offensive lineman and touchdown maker Joe Valerio on the show. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How's everybody doing today on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving?
We're doing very well. Before we get into football, now I have not watched episode 2 yet. But I did watch the premiere of Tulsa King, starring Sylvester Stallone. Have you had a chance to watch? Did you watch?
It's not painting the best picture of Tulsa, is it?
No. And this is the deal. This is, you make a great point here, because I was complaining to my wife. I said, you know, this was originally going to be Kansas City King, and it was going to be set in Kansas City. But one of the main writers from The Sopranos, Terrence Winter, stepped in, and he, you know, Taylor Sheridan, the guy that's responsible for Yellowstone and a whole bunch of other great stuff, is creating it. And Taylor Sheridan wanted to be Kansas City, and Terrence Winter, apparently the story goes, told him, look, it doesn't really make sense to have Stallone go to Kansas City and try to establish the mob because it's already in Kansas City and it's been here. But
right,
and he wanted it to be more of him going to somewhere a little bit. I don't know how. What's the kind way to put it?
It's kind of like Schitt's Creek, right?
There we go.
You know,
yes,
to a place that nobody's would think that kind of
right.
action would happen, right?
Right? And a little bit more, you know, backwoods, I guess, or whatever. And so, and Tulsa's a pretty good town, but boy, you're right.
Yeah.
It makes people in Tulsa very close to being morons. I mean, there's a lot of it. Just, you know, a lot of this. It doesn't
hayseeds from the.
And so,
you know,
yeah. So yeah. I'm like, you know, I'm kind of glad, even though I would have stalked Stallone to a point where I would have met him and took a picture with him at some point. But I'm kind of glad this ain't Kansas City, because it makes Tulsa look bad. But you gotta admit, Stallone dropped 3 different people in the season premiere, and if you're gonna have Sylvester Stallone in a TV series at this late age, don't make him vulnerable. Let him go punch people right in their mouths. That's what I got, and I was very pleased with that first episode, Joe Valerio.
What do they say? Do not go gentle into that good night.
That's right.
And he is not. But you know, first of all, Tulsa's not that dusty, and you know, I had seen online, you know, kind of on social media, like. They're saying, well, it would be nice if they actually shot some scenes in Tulsa. Like, apparently, there's some people who are natives to the city, and they're like, this isn't even in Tulsa. Like, they don't know where they're shooting it. So,
yeah.
You know, so we talked about that. Remember about how we were kind of glad it wasn't in KC, because it just those kind of, you know, it's kind of like Ozark, right? Man, do you want to be from like Lake of the Ozarks after watching that show? It's like,
yeah. And that thing's shot in Georgia. There was some. I know they shot at least some of it in Tulsa, because I know a buddy of mine was there on the set and watched some of it. But I whatever, suspension of disbelief. I don't care, because I'm watching Stallone play a gangster and he's punching people in Oklahoma, and that's all I need. Sign me up for that every Sunday night, and I'm happy. That's what I like.
Pleasure, right? You need to get out a little more energy after these Chiefs. Wins,
right.
Crazy wins, right? These Patrick Mahomes magical rides and journey we're on. You got to have a little bit more. You can't, you know, those aren't enough.
Right. I told my wife, you see a guy starting to smart off to him in this year, they go, oh boy, this guy's going to get it here in a minute. And boy, he gets punched and he's out. It turns his lights out. This is what he does, Joe. That's what I like. You know, my dad loves it. You could give my dad better. Then, hey, Stallone's out of prison and he's fighting people in Oklahoma. My dad will binge watch that thing if they let him.
Listen, it's Patrick Mahomes. It's kind of like you were saying. Hey, you see somebody mouth off to Stallone. It's kind of like, hey, you see a team give Patrick Mahomes a minute and 46 seconds? Come on. right?
Yes, sir.
Right.
We're all about the analogies around here.
That's
right?
Exactly
we're all
right.
about drawing the stories in.
But look, you played with a guy who authored so many, you know, 2-minute drill comebacks in Joe Montana. And we've watched Patrick Mahomes enough to this is nothing new, but I still marvel. It's a minute 46 with two timeouts, and growing up as a Chiefs fan, and you know this, when Marty was the coach, the Chiefs were always on the other side of that until they got Montana, and you know, he did that in Denver, which was awesome. But I remember living in fear with giving the ball back to Elway or Marino or whoever with a buck 46 left. Now, it's just, 146, that's a lot of time. Two timeouts, and they didn't need it all. Are you still, when you watch this, and Kelce and Mahomes and what they do to other teams, like that's still got to be just amazing for you as a former player to watch how easily they drive down the field, rip someone's heart out.
I don't want to call it a syndrome. I'm no medical person or a trained psychologist or anything like that. But I know that there was a show, and I'm trying to remember the name of it, where the guy was the rock climber, and he did the free climbing, right? It's something like that, right?
Free solo?
Free solo. Thank you. So they had people on that documentary, like, you know, people trained, you know, in healthcare and psychology, that he had a syndrome where it took that kind of adrenaline rush just to get him to normal, to feeling normal. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
show?
I have. Absolutely.
It's really good.
I have a son who's like that a little bit, Joe.
Whoa.
He's the thrill seeker. He wants to go downhill mountain biking, and I went with him. And every time we'd hit a part of the mountain where I thought, I could die here. You know, like I'm going at an unsafe speed on the side of a mountain right now. He would be behind me going, whoa! You know, because like to him, yeah, and you're right, it's like the dopamine levels in your body and all that stuff. Some people need, that's what a thrill seeker is, right? They need that to just feel at equilibrium, where the rest of us are like, okay, that was a rush, and now I need to calm down for a little bit.
So you couple that with amazing skill in something, like we'll use Patrick and Joe Montana, right, as the examples. Just they have great skill in athletics and in throwing a ball and doing all the things that it takes to be a great football player and a quarterback. Then you couple it with, and I've said it 1,000 times, what I used to see in Joe Montana visually, personally, in the huddle, on the field, and that what I now see with Patrick, and, you know, I've seen him play live, but I've never been in the huddle with him, but I see the same thing. The game is extremely slow for Patrick. And I think it's, and I always go back, you want to talk about drawing a strange analogy. I remember watching the show on like the Animal Planet or Discovery Channel, and it was about flies. Okay. I was bored. Okay. So Tulsa King wasn't on yet.
Right.
So it was about insects and why it's so hard to like swat a fly and do those things, because their metabolism is so high that they see everything in slow motion. Right. So you imagine the fly swatter or your hand or a piece of rolled up paper trying to hit a fly on your window, and all of a sudden that fly gets away. You're like, how did he do that? It's because number one, they've got like, you know, thousands of, you know, kind of like pupils in their eyes and whatnot. But that's the analogy that I draw.
I mean, hey, look, everything. I just, there's so many different ways to try to describe Patrick Mahomes. I welcome anything new because I run out of ways to describe what I see.
I do think that's a great, I mean, every sport in which, you know, decision-making happens quickly, and that's almost every sport, you hear about the guys that have, the phrase that I hear all the time is they have ability to slow the game down. And what you're seeing is they see the game happening. It doesn't look like chaos to them, you know, if the window, that pass that Mahomes threw to Fortson, after the BS holding call.
It's like he just placed it in his gut. You hear, drop it in there. You know, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, Joe.
He knows when to take risks. He's a great decision maker in those tight situations. And I see a lot of the same things in those other quarterbacks that were good at that. You know, with the John Elways and the Joe Montanas of the world, they just have a way of making the game slow down so that their decision making seems a lot better. And you know, look, if you're operating at a high pace, of course there are going to be times when you make a mistake. But you know, I think that was the differentiator in that game. You know, Sunday night, is, you know, 5 sacks to 1, right? Patrick knew when to move in the pocket. How about that run at the last drive, right? He just knew the alley opened up for him, and he just saw it, and he took it. And, you know, 1 sack to 5, no picks, you know, and I think what the Chiefs did that Patrick has been orchestrating and sort of maybe pushing the run a little bit more with the coaching staff, maybe he's the one behind it. I mean, they averaged 7.8 yards per play to the Chargers, like 5.4 or 5.6. That's two and a half more yards almost per play. So if you run 60, 70 plays in a game, you know, you're talking about a football field and a half or more that you're gaining throughout the game. And I think that is really was the recipe for the success in that game was those three things. Taking care of the football, Patrick being able to see things happening and make good decisions, and then coupled with the fact that they were averaging almost 2.5 yards more per play, that's huge confidence builders for the line, the receiver, everybody. It opens up the playbook for Eric Bieniemy. Like, it just – they've got it rolling right now. And the one thing I would like to see this team do is not get behind. Because someday they're going to run into a defensive juggernaut that's not going to let some of those things happen, right? Just being honest. You know, they're going to run into someone as the fit – Marty used to say all the time, when you start going to the playoffs, the fit gets tighter at the top. And when you start eliminating teams that can't do it, like – just the 20 points in the first half, you just hope that trend doesn't continue, even though the defense played out of their minds in the second half.
They sure did, and that's what I wanted to ask you about now, because we were all wringing our hands about the pass rush and hoping the Chiefs would add a pass rusher in the second half of the season. But guys like Colin Saunders and Mike Dana and Carlos Dunlap have really stepped up. Frank Clark's been better. Chris Jones is playing at an elite level. And they have other players like Willie Gay and Nick Bolton who you can blitz at the right time, can get to the quarterback. Right now, the Chiefs are tied for 4th in the NFL in sacks. The only 3 teams that have more sacks than the Chiefs are Dallas, New England, and Philadelphia. What do you think about that pass rush? They had 5 sacks against the Chargers. That's what they need. And if that pass rush is going to be like that, well, I'll see you in Arizona at the Super Bowl, Joe Valerio.
Yeah, there's no doubt. If the defense plays the way they played in the second half and the offense keeps rolling the way they're rolling and they can get healthy again, right, and have all the weapons, even though we know that, you know, Patrick doesn't always need them all. He makes it work, and he and Eric and Andy make it work. I have no doubt that they're the right now the best team in no doubt in the AFC, and you know, and we'll find out when they get to the Super Bowl if they're the best team in the NFL, and I have no doubt that they're up there, and that they're gonna get punch their ticket to Arizona if they can get healthy, continue on this path. I got to give a lot of credit to Coach Spagnuolo. I mean, he just does a fantastic job of putting people in the right place at the right time. You know, that's an art, man. That's a skill for coaches to build playbooks and design game plans around their players. And that's the one thing I've said about this coaching staff, even when Andy was in Philly, you know, and watching him shine here, is they have, and that's, you know, it probably starts at the top, right, with Coach Reed, is that they never try to fit a square peg into a round hole. They never say, this is my offensive and defensive philosophy, you're going to fit it, or it's my way or the highway. They don't do that. This coaching staff says, okay, this is the player's skills, this is what they do, we're going to design a game plan and design plays around their skills and how we can make this team most successful. It's a lesson in leadership for everybody, right? Because we all have our thoughts and opinions about the way things should be done, and you know, and anytime you're in a leadership position, corporate America, wherever you exist, you know, you want to fit your personnel and your people into your philosophy. But it's the one thing that Andy doesn't do. He really, you know, obviously he's got some overarching, you know, he's got ideas and plays, but he just, you know, look at the way he's made Travis Kelce just, you know, an incredible weapon. I mean, you know, I mean, it's the tight end position. They've completely revamped what the tight end position looks like. I think the world of them for that. And I think going back to long answer to your short question on defense, I think it's what Coach Spags is doing as well. I think it's a marriage of the skill and the development of these players, along with him just putting these guys in the right spot at the right time to be successful.
Okay, this is great, Joe, what you're talking about, because this was actually leading into the question I wanted to ask you about. Kelce being a perfect example of a guy who not only has he grown as a football player, like, you know, physically and all that, tactically his awareness has grown, but mentally he's so much more mature. You know, he's grown as a person. He used to be kind of the knucklehead that would do something that might get you a 15-yard penalty for, you know, making a hand gesture at a ref or whatever. Yeah. And now he's like this incredible leader on the field that everybody looks at. He just has grown so much as a person, and I think you give the coaching staff a lot of credit for that. And I want to give Chris Jones a similar amount of credit. The knock on Chris Jones, even from within the building, I mean, they were not shy about saying this early in his career, was, yeah, he makes a lot of plays in the backfield, but you can't count on him to be where he's supposed to be in a run fit. You know, you can't count on him to keep gap responsibility because he's just trying to get up the field and make a play. So you got to kind of cover, you got to account for the fact that you can't trust him to be where he's supposed to be. So he would kind of have this perception of being an amazing, big, physical, aggressive talent, but maybe not necessarily a guy that was the most, mentally plugged into the game. One of the biggest plays in this game on Sunday night, you talk about how much time was left in the game, Stephen, right? The Chargers get the ball back, and you think to yourself, did they leave the Chargers too much time?
31 seconds.
They could have come back. And the Chargers try to go with, like, you know, to do the same thing that Mahomes did. The middle of the field is going to be wide open. Let's see if he can just run it right up the field for 20 yards. And Chris Jones gets a sack on the play. And Chris Jones spoke yesterday and said, here's what he had to say. I want to get your reaction, because to me, I was like, wow, I don't think 3 or 4 years ago Chris Jones has this answer at all. This is what he said about that play.
Just collapsed in the pocket. I don't know if it was Frank or George Karloff that was making him step up. Ends played really, really well today on making him step up in the pocket. And for me, it was an easy, easy sack.
So that was part of what he said. But what he also said was, we were in a two deep zone, and I knew the middle of the field was going to be open. So I knew that there was a good chance that the biggest play they could get was Herbert taking the ball right up the middle, because we didn't have anybody there. So I knew that my gap responsibility was going to be important there. And instead of getting up the field, he just stayed in his spot and kind of waited for Herbert to come to him. To me, like, I'm curious your reaction to that part of him thinking the game, because I don't feel like we hear that answer from Chris Jones a few years ago.
No, I thought it was such a maturation process he has gone through, and every player goes through it eventually. Sometimes, unfortunately, after they're done playing, because they look back on their career and they realize, if I just would have had some role, or if I would have provided the role clarity, we call it role clarity in the corporate world, where people, you know, they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing because they feel like, well, I've got to do it all. If I turn this project over to this other colleague, then, you know, I'm going to, it's not going to get done. It's a trust. I think there's trust in that role clarity, and knowing that you have talented people around you that if you're going to do your job and you do everything as a team, good things will happen. And, you know, all the cliches are just flying right now. Rising tides raise all boats, right?
That's right,
and
John F. Kennedy.
There's a maturation process, I think, that every player goes through when they realize, God, if we can do so much more if we all do our part, right? And that none of us is stronger than all of us. And I think that's what players like Travis Kelce and, you know, Chris Jones are going through in their careers, and that's the journey that all players go on. Like I said, sometimes players will look back on their careers and say, God, if I just would have, maybe we would have won a Super Bowl, or maybe we would have done more as a team if I would have played my part, right, and done the things that I needed to do. And that's a tough thing, right, because you're talking about hearing your name announced, right? No, nobody gets their name announced for, you know, for like, we'll use that example with Chris Jones. You don't get, now, of course, he was able to tackle, you know, Herbert on some of those plays. But, like, let's say he did it. Let's say he just forced Herbert into a bad pass or something, or if Herbert tried to run and then he dumped it and made a bad play. nobody's going to go, whoa, and the loudspeaker doesn't say, and you know, hey, everyone, Chris Jones just really had a disciplined pass rush right there. Like, nobody's going to. Nobody, and they don't even – they sometimes they don't even announce that, you know, in the booth when you're watching it on TV or listening on the radio. It's you don't get your name announced for that. And I think that is the real maturation. And you watch Travis Kelce does the same thing. He's throwing his body around. He's running into linebackers. He's – you know, he's making blocks. He's doing tackle trap or tight end trap plays. Like, the guy just does it all. And then, you know what? Knowing that if he just continues to do his job, eventually things are going to open up. And, you know, how cool is it that he beat the guy that body slammed him, right? I was like, yeah, my sweet revenge. But you know what? This is where Travis Kelce, to go back to him, and I love the Chris Jones quote. I loved hearing that. And then Travis Kelce was going back and forth, you know, and saying how much he appreciates playing against that team and how good everybody is. And they're all doing it. They're all, that whole team right now is following. I got to give a little credit to Patrick. They're following his lead because the guy just doesn't, he never says the wrong thing. And even though he might be thinking it, he continues to do the right thing as a leader. So I love what this team is doing right now. It's all I keep hearing is that they are a family. And I think that's going to be the secret sauce for this team to get to Arizona.
Joe, thank you very much for the time. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, guys. Great to be on with you.
That's Joe Valerio, former Chiefs offensive lineman, who joins us every Tuesday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, and Marco Marquez. Here's a man that bet $1,000 on Saudi Arabia to win this morning, and he is rolling in dough now. Gary Lezak.
Did Saudi Arabia win a World Soccer match?
They just pulled off one of the greatest upsets in the history of the World Cup.
That is crazy. What was the final score?
2-1 was the final score.
How did they do that?
Because it was a world soccer match.
It was a world soccer match. That's certainly a way to describe it. They fell behind 1-0, and they scored two really good goals. I mean, really good goals. The game winner is going to be something that's going to be shown. It might be the biggest moment of the whole World Cup. I mean, it's only 3 days in, so we'll see what can top it. But it was an amazing shot, a great goal, and I didn't get to watch the whole game, so I don't know exactly how they pulled it off, other than those two incredible goals. But that's what's great about sports. We love sports because you actually have to go play the game, right? Like, yeah. And that's my problem with college football is that we actually still care about what people's opinions are. And that actually matters. Opinions aren't supposed to matter. Argentina might beat Saudi Arabia 9 times out of 10. They didn't win today. They lost, you know?
Wow.
And that's what we love
about
sports.
That was the 1 out of 10. Then 9 other times they lose.
It might have been more like 99 out of 100. I don't know. It is that big
maybe
of an upset.
999 out of 1,000, maybe.
That's a lot.
Maybe.
It's possible. Anyway,
a meteorologist might have said that Argentina had a 100% chance of winning until the data changed.
I would have said a 99.9% chance. Okay. Anyway, there's a 100% chance it will not rain today. Nate, you can do it.
Okay. All right.
There's a 100% chance it's not going to rain today. There's been a cloud in the sky. It's sunny. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely spectacular. It's going to be a beautiful day. You know, the late Bill Grigsby used to say, it's going to be a beautiful day.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Oh, my gosh. He and I used to do this Monday night football recap when I was over at Fox 4 years ago. So that was so fun with him. Anyway, sunny, beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous weather today. A high temperature near 60. Tomorrow near 60 degrees. No travel problems across the entire nation on Wednesday. So getting to grandma's house or getting to your parents' house or wherever you're going to Thanksgiving is looking fantastic. And it looks dry on Thanksgiving in Kansas City. Maybe a brief shower. I just doubt it. And then there's a storm that could bring us some rain Saturday, but no major travel problems for the entire holiday weekend. We'll go over the details on KSHB 41 News. And you guys have a great day.
You do the same, Gary Lezak. That's Gary Lezak on Sports Radio 810 WHB.